Blog Talk Radio.
Going to the council hall and thresh things out there.
go, Yupo, he said, and followed me in there, and more people followed him. It was like a tribal meeting, with everybody grabbing a chair, and I started to tell them what I know about the ghost dance. And from my vision, my dream, from the great spirit and the little spirituals have shown me, from what I have heard from my old people when I was a small boy, I tried to form the story. Somewhere between 1880 and 1890, there was an eclipse of the sun. Many Indians felt the earth tremble and thought that the sun had died, and they felt that a great misfortune was upon them. They had been put on the reservation to farm. They didn't know how, but that didn't matter. They had years of drought. The wind blew their land away in clouds of dust, and even the white farmers who had better land and the know-how were having a hard time. And the Indians had been given some cattle for the land taken from them, and they were supposed to breed them. But as the crops failed and the government-issued food was late, the Indians ate the cattle. And after that, they starved. And they had measles, whooping cough, lung trouble. It wouldn't have killed strong people, but it killed those who were weak from hunger. And the Indians said, "We might just as well lie down and die." And they were hoping that some help would come before it was too late. The ghost dance started in the southwest among the Utes. When the sun was darkened, one of their holy men heard a loud noise, like many thunders, and he fell down dead, but an eagle carried him up to the sky. And when he came back to the life again, he told the people that he had seen God, or the Great Spirit. He had been shown a new and beautiful land, which the Great Spirit had prepared for his Indian children. It was covered with lush, high grass. It was as the land had been before the white man came, full of buffalo, deer, and antelope. It was dotted with many teepees. In it lived all the Indians who had been killed by the white man or by his diseases. And they were all alive again in that beautiful land. And no white man's things were allowed among them. No guns, no pots, no pans, no whiskey. That Ute holy man came back to earth with a sacred knowledge. He had been taught things in that new land, a few songs and a dance. By singing and dancing, the dead Indians could be made to return to the earth together with the buffalo. That the Ute medicine man began to teach the dance to his people. He had five songs. The first brought on mist and cold. The second brought snow. The third brought a gentle shower, and the fourth brought on a big rainstorm, and the fifth made the sun shine again. That man also had received a holy feather and some sacred red-faced paint, and he told everybody, "Don't hurt a human being. Don't fight. My ghost dance is a dance of peace." It seemed to be the message and help the people had been praying for. One tribe after another took up the dance. When the Sioux heard about it, they sent four trustworthy men to the south to talk to this Ute holy man. And they were Good Thunder. They were Good Thunder, Cloud Horse, Yellow Knife, and Short Bull. They had a hard, long time traveling, and most of the land was already occupied by the whites. They had roads, fences, and railroad tracks to cross. Indians were not allowed off the reservation without a special permit. They had to travel by night and hide in the daytime. These four men came back. They said, "It's all true, what you have been told about the new belief." One said, "I fell down as dead. I was dead. I found myself on this new earth, and I saw my relative there who died last year. I saw him as I see you now, and I saw his wife who was killed by the white soldiers a long time ago, and they were living living in a big teepee, and they gave me some meat, and I saved it, and this meat from another world, and here it is. The sound man said, this Ute holy man let me look into his hat, and I saw the whole world in there. The third man said, this prophet told us when we killed a buffalo to leave his head, his tail, and his four legs, and it would come alive again. You know, you don't see many buffalo anymore. We came across a lonely survivor. We killed it, ate it, its meat, and did what the Ute had told us. And we watched from some ways off. The head, tail, and hooves formed themselves up into a new buffalo who walked away. And the fourth man said, this new religion must be good because now when we meet men who used to be our enemies, crows and Pawnee, that ghost dances, that ghost dance has made us into friends and brothers. And now we are just one big tribe, Indians. These men brought an eagle feather, some special herbs and sacred red face paint, which the Ute holy man had given them. And still the Sioux didn't take up the ghost dance at once. It first came up to the Arapaho, the cloud people, and to the hole in the nose people, the Neg Pierces, and to the Cheyennes and Crows. That's what my grandfather told me. And one man in the Arapaho tribe sacrificed himself in a vision quest, and he had his dream, which introduced him to the start. Instructed him to start the ghost dance. And that dream also gave him the herb that went with the dance. It was really no herb at all. It was the flesh of a bird, an owl, they say. This Arapaho made different designs which traveled from tribe to tribe. Ghost dance dresses, shirts and robes with pictures of birds and animals, the sun, the moon, and the morning star painted on them. Some of the Sioux were traveling some more to get the full story on that dance. Men like Short Bull, who had already visited the Ute prophet, and Kicking Bear, a fierce scowling warrior from the Cheyenne River. And these two became leaders of the ghost dance. They told the people that they could dance a new world into being. There would be landslides, earthquakes, and big winds. Hills would pile up on each other. The earth would roll up like a carpet when all the white men's ugly things. The stinking new animals, sheep and pigs and the fences, the telegraph poles, the mines and factories. Underneath would be the wonderful old new world as it had been before the white fat takers came. He said, the spirits of the dead will live again on this earth, and the ghost dance will bring back our dead relations. It will bring back the buffalo. Everything will be good and pure again, and there will be no killing. And the white men will be rolled up, disappear, go back to their own continent. There might be a few good ones. One could give them an eagle feather to stick in their hair. Then they could come too, be a part of the new world, live like Indians. And only a very few could make it. The earth will shake and a big storm will come up. Then we'll be reborn. And men and women will take their clothes off at that time and not be ashamed. And they're coming again from the womb of the grandmother earth. The dancers believe that by their actions, They were bringing about a happy hunting ground for the living right down here. There were some good words in their ghost dance song. In one song it says, "They are butchering cows there. They are killing cows. So take your arrow straight. So make your arrow straight and make an arrow. Make an arrow." They didn't mean real butchering of real arrows or real arrows. The song meant, if you want to go to the new earth, you have to make an arrow, and it has to be straight, and it has to be perfect. And that arrow, that's for yourself, and you have to be straight and be on the good side. For that reason, bows and arrows were made for the dance and hung up on a pole in the center of the dance round. Sometimes the dance started with a woman shooting an arrow into each of the four directions from which the wind blows. And these arrows were made in the old way, with stone points. The dance started with a sweat bath and the burning of sweet grass. And the dancers had their faces painted red with a black half moon on their cheeks or foreheads. They wore nothing made of metal, no knives, no silver ornaments, nothing that came from the white man, except that many of the ghost dance skirts were made of cotton when the buckskin gave out. Sometimes a sacred place was made in the form of a square, and on the west corner was placed a sacred pipe. This stood for us, the Sioux Nation. At the north, they placed an arrow. That meant the Cheyennes and the Shawnee Yala. Or at the south, they put a feather for the Kangi Wis Kasha and the crows. At the east, we placed hail marks representing the Arapahoes. They did this to show that the dance united the tribes, even those who had been enemies before. And the dance lasted 4 days. Often they danced at night until daybreak. And the dance leader had a big stick, and on top of that, he had a little medicine bag and one eagle feather. If they fanned somebody with his eagle feather, it made him swoon. And the leader swung his staff with the feather around. And while the people were dancing, hand in hand, joined together, a power came from someplace. And a man or woman grew dizzy and fell down. And they looked as if they had died, except that their skin was shivering. Well, they let them be, sprawling in the center of the circle formed by the dancers. The others kept going. After a while, those people came to and got up. Then the dancers stopped for a while, and whoever had a spell or had fainted told what he had seen. Some said, "I was dead and have come back to life again." Others said, "An eagle took me up there to see my dead mother." Sometimes they found a piece of meat in their hands, or some chokeberries, some feathers, or beadwork, something from the other world. And they had it, and the leader, if he brought a handful of corn back, passed it around to every dancer that had supposed to come from the ghost, the spirit man. So they honored his corn, but it put it in a bag and tied it to their necklaces. Now, I just want to pause here because I want to mention the parallel here or the similarity between the the Mayan concept of the fourth dimensional transition that we're about to enter, and the ghost dance, they did transcend dimensions through it to this wonderful land that they saw. They saw their dead relatives and friends and wives, if you will, too. And as proof that they were there, they were given meat or jewelry or something, to bring back to Earth to prove that they were there. Chokchi or something. And they, so they wouldn't forget. And that they could prove the existence of this place to others as they came back. And this is it. Impossible to break. take into account as part of our existence. You know? And we go there. You know, we go there. We see these places and we visit these places in our minds and in our dreams. Well, in the ghost dance, they do that sort of thing. It's extremely powerful dance for the Indians. One time a young man had a spell, and he came up with some dirt in his fist, and a kind of white, grayish bird, and he told the people, "I got a piece from the morning star here, and I was up there, and there are people there, but you can't see them, and they can't see you, and no man will ever see them, but here is this earth, and it is human. We come from the earth, we are part of it, so this earth from the morning star must be a living being in a way." Another time, during a ghost dance up in Montana, they had a beautiful gathering there with many dancers. They were all singing in their own tribal language, and an old man fainted away in a trance. Then he came to, when he came to, he said, "I got a piece of the moon here." And repeated over and over again, "This is a piece from the moon. It looks like earth, but it is flesh." He opened his hand and he saw strange, powdery, shiny dirt. This was not the only time one of the people who had lost consciousness had woken up clutching some earth, they said, came from the moon. And some of it was preserved in several old medicine bags by the families of these ghost dancers. And I got hold of one of them and sent some of the strange dirt to the University of South Dakota in Vermilion to analyze. They told me later, "This dirt is really very much like a moon rock, but don't talk about it." A man from another tribe took part in a ghost dance of ours as a rapper. I think, and he said, "We are going to make all the ghost dances roads bulletproof. The design I taught you to put on the shirts has made them bulletproof already. This ghost dance tells me we must do away with the lights. They must go. We can make them go away because we have these bulletproof shirts. We can do it." And he held up one of the ropes and made somebody fire a rifle at it. He picked up a few bullets from the ground and said, "Look, these shells can't penetrate our shirts. They just fall down harmlessly on the ground. The white soldiers can't kill us." And one man saw and heard this, and he went and told his government people. That's where the trouble started. This was a peaceful dance, a vision dance, communicating with the dead relatives. But somebody had the wrong vision, and some white men misunderstood. And the man who carried the tale was a jealous man, telling lies to the government out of spite, and how the Indians wanted to kill all the whites. And he carried a grudge because his girlfriend had left him to join the ghost dancers. And so this jealous man betrayed his own people, and the government, instead of stopping them in a peaceful way, came to stop the ghost dancers with guns and cannons. First, they killed our holy man, sitting for McLaughlin, the agent of McLaughlin, the agent at Standing Rock, knew very well that Sitting Bull was not a ghost dancer leader. He also knew, in spite of all the talk about a big Indian uprising, that the ghost dance posed no threat to the whites. And the old chief was living peacefully in his little cabin. He had made friends with some whites. He liked to talk about the little white children in New York to whom he had given candy when he visited the Buffalo Bill show, saying the children were all alike, whether white or red, that people could be get along if they kept the child's mind. He also said, I want the white man with me, but not over me. But as long as Sitting Bull is alive, the people listen to him rather than to the government agent who wanted to civilize them and make them into white men. And Sitting Bull was in the way, and he had to die. About 30 Indian police surrounded the little cabin in which the old man lived. At first, he came peaceful. But then he heard somebody in the crowd singing, Sitting Bull, you were a warrior once. What are you going to do? He pushed the men away who were trying to handcuff him and said, I won't go. I once the fight between the police and Sitting Bull followers started. They started saying that they always say that if you want to see a real battle, you have to watch Sioux fighting Sioux. And all other battles are tame compared to this. When it was over, 15 men were laying dead in the snow, among them the old chief. Buffalo Bill had given Sitting Bull one of the circus horses for his show as a gift. As soon as the shooting started, that horse began to dance, and he thought he was back in the Wild West show at the circus. But unfortunately, he was no make-believe fight. As long as Sitting Bull and his closest friends, the men who had been with him through thick and thin, were still alive, Standing Rock had held out against this so-called civilization. It was a place where the Indians clung stubbornly to their old ways and beliefs. But once the new world was gone, people gave up and the missionaries had a big time. And that's why Standing Rock has fewer medicine men now than the other Sioux reservations. At Pine Ridge, the white agent was so sure that the ghost dance was the start of the big uprising that he called in the army. Soon the whole place was swarming with bluecoats. There were more soldiers than Indians, and some ghost dancers got scared. Ran away to the Badlands, pulling up there where they were hard to find. And we have an old man here who everybody knows, Mr. Fool. He can still remember the ghost dance, and he watched it when he was a little boy. I don't know how old I am. The government gave me a birthday according to the fiscal year, July 1887, but that's only when they got around to taking a census of our family. I was already maybe 4 years old when they said I was born. In those days, the government didn't have birth records like they do today, like they do now. I am told I was born in Oklahoma. So that's all I know about this. But to start with, I tell you what I remember of this, of what stated the trouble, the terrible trouble. We happened to be at Roosevelt, camping under guard, soldiers, cavalry. They rounded up all the fathers and grandfathers and made sure that they didn't get away. And mixed up with a hostile bunch. My father was hauling freight from Valentine in an ox team. He went down there early in the morning and was back at night to unload. We heard there was a ghost dance going on north of us at an Indian village called Salt Camp. My mother's youngest brother took sick and he wanted to see the dance so that he could be cured. And they hooked up the buckboard, and we drove up there. My uncle, my sister, and my mother, and me. big circle of men and women holding hands, just as they do now in a round dance. They all sang ghost dance songs and walked round and round and round and round, and they had no drum, just their voices to keep going. I remember one man, he acted like he was drunk, swaying back and forth. Then he fell on his face. Then he turned over lying on his back. He was stretched out there, and two dance leaders came with fire. With fire, and a big eagle moved that mean fan. He put some herbs on the fire and fanned the flame. He woke up this dancer, and he got up. Then asked him what he had experienced. He told them, "I was on a road from here over there. I couldn't see it, but I walked on it. It went up a hill on which an old man was sitting. I went up to him, and he said, 'There is your people over there, over this way, a big Indian camp. Keep these buffalo and horses that's where you are going to be. Now go back, teach your people.' This man had come back from the other world with a new song which he taught the people. There was the man from another tribe, and he fell down in their trance. When he came to, he gathered up a few ghost shirts, and hung them on the floor. These shirts were made out of canvas, and they had a sun and a half moon painted on the back. Some men were firing their bullets at them, and the Indian from the other tribe said that the bullets could not go through their shirts, but were dropping to the ground. My uncle didn't know whether to believe him. Some of my uncles, I had seven of them, went up the Pine Ridge near Wounded Knee and influenced my father to join them. My father got a 20-day pass to go up there, and after that time, the Indian police told us that we would have to go back. Pine Ridge was just a few buildings and a couple of offices and a stockade. The teepees were all pushed together and crowded. They were guarded day and night, but some people got away to the sidelines. We went up there with a team-covered wagon, and my father was a medicine man, and he taught me some ghost dances. And the whole world is coming, and I love my children, who shall grow to be a nation, says my father. About the electrical magnetic impulse that may be coming from the sun early next year, that the power grid, the world power grid, and the power grid in the United States would fail. In the extent of 70-90% of the population would be unable to survive if the electric grid failed. And
survive. I mean, that's, you know, hospitals and everything and whatever, you know, anything that has to do with electricity would be just destroyed. So, you know, maybe as little as 10% of the population of this country could survive a catastrophic event like that. No communications, no anything, you know. So, I don't know why I brought that up. But I was trying to fix my computer. But anyway, we're back. And I wanted to take a moment. I have about 16 minutes left hour for the show.
Had the prophecy that the whole universe
peace as we emerged into the new age, which is the Aquarian age, which begins on December 22nd, 2012, and it's very, very interesting to try to. But knowing what I know about the Mayan calendar, to be able to draw that parallel with the Sioux and with Langdeer's vision, and whether or not he was familiar with the Mayans, he was definitely familiar with Indian folklore, and his prophecies are his stories also relate to the Hopi tradition. And Menendez doesn't mention the Hopi by name here, but definitely their prophecies are of a broader Indian prophecy where Wampanoag is the Great Spirit. They all believe in the Great Spirit. They all get their visions from the Great Spirit. So all of these tribes are interrelated in some by their religion, not necessarily by their genetically, but though they are to the extent that they are more or less of the same race. But the fascinating thing is that they really all more or less share the same vision. Even though they've been so oppressed, so hopelessly poor, and so violently oppressed, racially oppressed, and economically oppressed, they are oppressed. They still hold on to this old ways. Allowed them to survive, however failed them in the 20th and 21st century. But nevertheless, I don't. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure how they did that. What they did. And I'm going to leave it at that. This is the epilogue, and I may have found this. I don't think so, but chapter is called Blood Turned into Stone. And let's see how far I can get on this one. An old tale among our people passed on from grandparent to grandchild over a span of many generations tells of immense blood, which at one time engulfed the prairies like an ocean. And some of the people who inhabited this land ages ago are trying to save themselves by taking refuge on top of a high hill. But the flood rose and washed over them, overturning the earth and crushing all living things underneath its weight. The flesh and bones of the people were turned into a large pool of blood. And the blood gelled, grew solid, and after a time turned into red pipestone. It is still here, there, in the southwest corner of Minnesota, the only place on earth where you can find this sacred red blood. she was safe from the raging flood. There she gave birth to twins who grew up to be the ancestors of the Sioux Nation. And this, the old people once told us. Now, this is interesting. Doesn't this remind you of the founding of Rome, or the same story of the twins who were raised by Romulus and Remus, right? Who were raised by a wolf. They founded Rome. But in the pool of blood figures in this tales, which are so old that there's nobody left now who can remember them in their entirety. My grandfather told me the tale of the rabbit boy. And once upon a time, a rabbit came across a pool of blood. The rabbit made it congeal by rolling it around, giving it a shape of a human being, resembling a dwarf. It was still raw blood, not flesh, and the rabbit kicked it around until it formed a little gut. And he kept moving it around until it grew bones. And still the rabbit kept playing with it until it became a human, a boy. Now the rabbit dressed this new human being beautifully in red-painted buckskin, decorated with porcupine quills, and he called him Rabbit Boy. Rabbit Boy started walking on until he came to a village of other human beings, where he saw many boys like himself. They asked him where he came from, and he said, "I come from another village," but there was no such village. The village he had come to was the only village on the whole earth. Well, Rabbit Boy added, "That place is so beautiful, I couldn't take you there. Your clothes are not good enough." And there was a young virgin in the village, and the boy thought it would be a good thing to marry her. Married her to the rabbit boy, because he seemed to have strange powers and it would benefit him to make him their relative. But Tony, the Spider-Man, a trickster and schemer, who is always waiting to turn somebody's misfortune to his own advantage, mocked this woman for himself. And he worked on the minds of the people, turned them against the rabbit boy, making them jealous of his fine clothes. And one village boy said, "I have a power to work on that rabbit boy. I'm going to throw a hoop over him." Then also robbed him of his red painted robes. Then the rabbit boy resisted. He tied him up. The two-faced spider egged him on. And let's cut him up with a butchering knife. Rabbit Boy was still standing, tied in rawhide. He said, "If you are about to kill me, I will sing my death song. Friend, friend, I have fought the sun. They tried to burn me up, but he couldn't. Even in battle, won the sun. I was not killed." And they cut up the Rabbit Boy into a pile of meat chunks for soup. But that Rabbit Boy was hard to kill. A great storm arose, floods, rains, hail. A cloud came down, making everything disappear. When that cloud is gone, those chunks of meat were gone too. But there were some who had seen that the chunks of meat had joined together again, forming themselves up into the rabbit boy once more. And he had come to life again, but gone up with the cloud. Again, there were voices. The rabbit boy is Wakan. Sacred, full of power. Let us marry him to this girl. And the tricky spider said, "Let's forget about him. I am just as powerful. Tie me up, cut me up." And Tony remembered the words of the rabbit boy and said he thought the power was in the words of Tony saying. They cut Tony up, but he never came back to life again. All that was left of him was some chunks of meat. It's in very much the same way as the rabbit boy owned as much blood man. Other beings were made, such as the elk and the buffalo, whom we hold sacred, because they not tell the whole story here, because in order to tell it or even listen to it, a person ought to have fasted for 2 days and purified himself in the sweat lodge. But this much can be told. That pool of blood comes up a third time in our tales. Howard read there a man from Allen, who lived to be almost 100 years old, used to relate a story that his own grandfather had told him. According to this, there once was a young man with many lifetimes ago, one of the first to pray with the sacred pipe on behalf of the tribe. At this time, there was only this one pipe which the holy white buffalo woman had brought us. But when the young man went to a lone, towering rock, the rest of the people stayed behind and was waiting for him to finish his prayers. And they waited in vain because he never returned. After 4 days, they went to look for him, and at the foot of the distant rock, where they had last seen him, they found a pool of blood in a calf pipe, and they camped there for 4 more days, mourning him. And one man prayed for him, leaning his head against the rock, and he heard a voice from deep within the earth saying to him, "This is my blood, which you are going to use." And again, the blood turned into red pipestone. It is good that these ancient legends passed along from generation to generation. All tell us that it is our blood, the blood of the Sioux Nation, which turned into the stone from which the sacred pipe is made. Because this pipe is us. The stem of our black stone, the stem of our backbone, the bowl, our head. The stone is our blood, red is our skin. The opening in the bowl is our mouth, and the smoke rising from it is our own breath, and the visible breath of our people. And I think with that, I'm going to end it tonight, because this is very, very long. I think I'll stop there. And maybe I'll read the rest next week. But nevertheless, I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you got something out of it. And I hope you can see the parallels to other indigenous prophecies that are now coming. They're now coming to us. They're now coming true. The changes, the massive changes in the earth, and the droughts and the earthquakes, and all of these are predicted, as well as the changing times, the changing how the average person could go into this ghost dance, meditate, and fall down and see and have proof himself, be transcend to that dimension. And that's ultimate mysticism. Mind travel. Spirit travel. So I hope that somehow that prepares us for what's to come. If it does, I am still not convinced yet that it's going to, but I definitely am convinced that we are transcending into another dimension. There's no question in my mind. The evidences are all clear and all there. Prophecies are all there. Now, it's coming true. The only reason we're reluctant to accept them is because we're living in the middle of them. The world is collapsing. That was politically, physically, nature is erratic. I almost dread looking forward to this winter. Next year, when we have these tremendous, if we survive economic collapse, global economic collapse. We're also facing a global cataclysm that size we haven't seen since the Atlantic Ocean. Or Atlantis sunk. I read something today that they were saying that a volcano in that same area was active, extremely active, and they were expecting any kind of cataclysmic event to happen again. So, brace yourself, folks, but take it to heart, too, that we've had the warning. And, the Indians had their warning, and I believe they're heeding it. They are. But I like to think that I'm taking some kind of learning from their great visions and able to calm myself, educate myself to be able to instruct others, even to ascend, to get through this period and rise to the next level of our spiritual awakening, consciousness. And with that, I'll leave you for tonight and this week. And we'll be back. We'll be back next Tuesday night. We'll be sure. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So good night, everyone.